So, cold open, Heather.
I know. Like, what's the crack, Rock? What has been going on?
Just a lot.
I know.
Yes.
It's been a crazy few months for us, hasn't it?
Quite busy. Quite busy.
So why are we doing this cold open?
We're doing this cold open because we were promising a podcast with our lovely students.
Oh, was this intergalactic crack on the road?
That's the one.
What? So, okay, right. What are we going to be listening to for the next, like, 40 minutes or so?
We'll be listening to the adventures that the students attending the ACM conference back in June. I say students and myself, I'm no longer a student.
you wish.
Yes, I wish. We're having over in the United States.
Oh my God, like that sounds so fun. Like, was it Arizona, was it?
It was Arizona. Now, we were promising that maybe it might be even two episodes, it's just going to make it one, because literally the other one would have just been a travelogue, and that might be just a little bit too self-indulgent, as it were. It's like, oh, we went there with this great place, it was fantastic, and we went to this other one. Oh, it's so great.
Us self-indulgent? Never. okay, so I'm looking forward to listening to this episode. Hopefully we will be getting more episodes out to you guys in the future, but as I've alluded to, we have been very busy, and yes, we will be continuing to be busy for a while longer.
That's just how it goes around here. We've been busy, I mean, you know, we went to a conference, but also just summer is conference seasons for academics especially. I say summer up to October, usually when the new academic year starts. And so we were in fact quite busy here in Armagh as well,
yeah,
with more conferences.
Yeah, we had our own conference season in September, which I don't honestly know if I survived it. I think I'm actually a spectre right now, you know, like I'm a ghostly apparition talking
That's
to you.
Very appropriate for the Halloween season that we're finally publishing this in.
I know, yeah. So yes, we've just been very occupied. So hopefully this podcast will, you know, maybe throw you back into the summer and, you know, give you warmer vibes that are maybe not, you know, autumn cozy vibes.
So hopefully they might keep you warm, yes, in these chilly evenings, perhaps. But let's get right to it.
Hi everyone, it's Uri here, and I'm here with Rock and a new guest today, Andrew. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
So yeah, we just want to do a quick intro to this episode to let you guys know that we're going to be going on a big road trip, and we thought it would be fun to bring you with us.
Yes, so Rock, Zuri, I and Alice are going to be going to the United States next week to attend the ACM conference, Asteroids, Comets and Meteors, held in Flagstaff, Arizona, starting on Monday the 19th and for the rest of the week.
So we'll have an episode, or maybe even two, to share with you, to give you a bit of an insight into what it's like to attend an international scientific conference. And we'll be mixing a bit of travel and a bit of science and turn it into intergalactic crack.
Yeah, so this will be our first time taking the podcast outside of Northern Ireland, and we're going to be speaking to lots of astronomers and students from all around the world. So stay tuned and you'll find out all about the crack.
Intergalactic crack on the road. Do you need some space? Oh hey, it's the first day of the conference today. Time jump. Blimey. First of all, if you hear any background noises, that's just the ambience. We intentionally added that to the end, you know, so it didn't feel too sterile. No, we're sitting in a corridor somewhere and recording this thing. And when I say we, well, it's in fact all four of us now. We were not previously, in fact, joined by Alice, because she was busy being enjoying her time in the nice weather in Wales.
I have returned from Wales to the other side of the world instead.
Very much returned, yes, exactly. So let us update you just on what we did. So we'll let you know how we got here, basically, because we had to get here from Northern Ireland, or in case of Alice, Wales. Start us off, Zuri.
Yes, so hello, it's me, Zuri. So our journey started from 8 a.m. in Armagh. We got the bus to Dublin, then we had a flight from Dublin to London, about an hour. And then we had a big 11-hour flight from London to Las Vegas. How did you find the journey, guys?
I got really bored and just stared at the wall for a bit because I couldn't do anything with the lights off.
To be honest, it wasn't so bad. I just played a lot of solitaire. I mean, passes for time.
I can tell you, listeners, he did actually do a bit of work as well.
Oh, yeah.
I was actually standing up and sitting down a lot because I was in the aisle seat next to two people who wanted to walk around a lot. But yes.
Yes, Alice and I, we were sat next to each other and we did join Rock in a few of his adventures. And then went over to Andrew and watched him play solitaire a few times.
You saw me win.
Yeah, very true. Unfortunately, I had the middle aisle, so...
Middle aisle, middle seat.
Oh, sorry, yes, middle aisle, middle seat. So I did find myself struggling and losing my sanity a bit towards the end, hence the walking. But it was all right. We got fed a good few times.
Mm-hmm.
Also got some gin and tonics and a couple
of
beers.
Gin and teas.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Okay, I missed that. I missed out. Damn.
It was the first drink. It was a double as well, so...
The point was to have that to hopefully put us to sleep, but didn't quite work. We're all still a bit jet-lagged, but anyway.
So, after we landed, we got a hire car and we drove and had an evening in Vegas. And I got to say, that place is something else, I think is a fair way of putting it.
Mad is what it is.
Just probably not the best place to be jet-lagged at 10 o'clock at night, especially on, like, the main old strip of casinos.
Yes. A lot of mental and visual stimulation, I should say. A bit too much for my liking, especially jet-lagged. But it was interesting.
Yes.
Definitely interesting, yes. We didn't gamble, by the way. Yet? ? We do know the odds, you know, because we do know some maths.
The house always wins. That's how it is, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe we'll find that out in a couple of weeks when we finish our journey. Yeah, and then after that, we had a sleep at the hotel. Not that much sleep because of jet lag. And then the following morning, we got the car and turned what should have been a 4-hour drive into something like, I don't know, a 6-hour journey or something from Las Vegas to Flagstaff because we stopped at the Hoover Dam on the way and just stopped a few different places to look at the ever rolling desert.
The scenery, which is slowly turning greener as you're coming closer to Flagstaff, and also some random shops along the way which looked interesting. Yes.
I have to say, I was truly impressed by the way that we're thousands of feet in the air. Higher than Ben Nevis, higher than any point of UK. And then you've just got these long, 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 long planes which still go up and up and up. It was impressive. I mean...
Yeah, Flagstaff is 2,000 metres above sea level, that is.
Yeah, more than 6,000 feet. I don't remember the exact number.
7,000 feet.
Okay.
Yeah.
On Sunday, there was basically registration and a bit of a reception, some drinks, some food to, say hi to people you know, or to be introduced to people you know you don't know by people that you do know, that sort of stuff. The usual. So that was the main thing. I may or may not have been late to that because I went travelling with someone else at a conference, and I left you all to fend for yourselves. But that was basically it for Sunday. And then Monday is the first proper day of conference, which has basically all of the things that a conference day normally has. Started with plenary sessions, which is a strange word, plenary. I have no idea where it comes from. So that's basically the one, the big ones. You all go in a big hall, and you all listen to the same people talking. Those are usually the invited talks, kind of overview of a topic or some important results, that sort of stuff. Then it was basically parallel sessions, because the big conference, you can't just all be in one room all the time. In fact, we split in three rooms, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, and we attended, those sessions and listened to some interesting talks.
I think that's one of the hard parts of doing this, is deciding which rooms you want to go into and which sessions you can get, because it seems like it's a bit of a hodgepodge. Like, Zuri, Rock, you had to go and see someone about polarimetry, didn't you? Well, you... Yeah.
Yes, there aren't that many talks about polarimetry this year at ACM.
Which makes us very sad.
Yes, very sad indeed. In fact, I think it's my talk and a few posters... And just this one other talk today that we saw had polarimetry. So yes, we were all in a asteroid session, but Rock and I quickly escaped and went to see the talk about polarization. Well, there was only one plot with polarization, but we both had a chuckle and a smile at each other.
It's like, oh yes, that's the plot. We've seen this plot before. It's just it was just like, oh yeah, this thing fits what we expected to do in polarization. The end.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's how it goes sometimes. It's still interesting stuff.
So we've still got talks till the end of the day, and then tomorrow it'll be poster sessions. So that'll be me and Andrew just standing by our posters and answering some questions for a bit. We might come back then if we get the time.
That's fair enough. Yeah, might get a live queue. Oh, it might be very difficult live because probably lots of chatter around us. If you're hearing some noises right there, that's Andrew looking at his poster, which is nearby. That'll be for tomorrow. Yeah. Okay, let's wrap up for today, and we will join you another day.
Tomorrow.
Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.
Captain Starlog. Oh, no, wait, that might be copyrighted. Probably not. It is Wednesday, 21st of June, 2023. It is the summer solstice in the Northern Hemisphere. And we skipped a day.
You were busy.
Sorry. We were busy, yeah, sorry about that, but we're here now.
Yes, we have the action-packed Tuesday and quite a busy Wednesday as well, so we'll tell you all about it. First of all, on Tuesday, there were poster sessions, which is, of course, very important, because two of our number had some posters to present.
Yes, so I started off the day 8:30 in the morning, I hung mine up on the Monday, and 8:30 in the morning, you stand in front of it, and lots of people walk past and they'll talk to you about your work, right? I think I was kind of put in an interesting position because it was fairly cramped in the room that we were in. So what people do is they'd walk into the room and my poster was right at the door. So they'd walk in, they'd see how cramped it was. I just turned straight to me and asked me a bunch of questions because they couldn't be bothered to go through the whole crowd. So I was speaking from 8:30 till a good 11:30, 12 o'clock that day, just about my work.
A very strategic positioning, almost too strategic, I suppose, yes. What the listeners might not know, actually, is what posters look like. It's not like a poster for, a movie or a band or something. There's signs on there.
There's our best attempt. Right? Yes, so, for example, my poster was... I've tried to think if you could even visualize this. It had to be 110 centimeters by 110, right?
Well, I will say it had to be up to 110 centimeters by 110 centimeters, which is square, you will note. Usually posters are, A something format, but squares are also fun.
Yes, so just for context on mine, so what I have is you have a brief description right at the very top, try and grab people's eyes, some pretty pictures, and some brief words about what they're meant to represent, and then a list of conclusions at the bottom. And the idea is that you just want people to have a look and see the main bits, right? Then come and talk to you, because you're never going to get all your work on the poster in one, because you'd fill up the whole thing and no one would ever be bothered to read it.
It's a bit like a taster. Yeah. And then if they like the taste, they actually ask you a question, and yeah, then that's how you fall into a full-blown conversation.
Or if, like me, and you put maybe too many words on the poster, people come and look at it for a little bit, and then they look at you and they say, "Can you sum it up for me?"
Which, by the way, is a common situation.
So that was generally what happened with me.
Yes. So you both presented your current work, or at least some parts of it. I don't know if you want to give a. Because I don't think we actually gave any summaries over the sort of work that we've been doing. So would you like to summarise, Andrew, first? Because you had the first poster, in the first poster session yesterday.
I'll do my best, I guess. So very simply put, imagine there's a big old rock floating through space and it gets smacked by another and broke up into lots of little pieces, right? We want to see, if we see a bunch of pieces of asteroids floating together and it looks like they've been part of a breakup, can you rewind the clock and clump them together into one big body?
right? And I'm trying to see if I can use machine learning to do that, which is really the hot button topic of the day, isn't it? Everyone's talking about machine learning. I don't know if I could ask ChatGPT about this one though.
Yes, yes, very interesting stuff. And Alice, yourself?
Yeah, so my poster session was at 1:30, and my poster was also on asteroid families, so an asteroid that's broken up, but in near-Earth space. So the main belt's quite a safe zone, but near the Earth, gravity is a bit stronger because of all the planets nearby, so things get pushed around by gravity, and it's a lot harder to find these families. What I'm doing is finding new ways to compare the orbits, or compare how two asteroids travel in space, and to see whether they are related, whether they are a family, and just looking at the different kind of positions that they can be in and how that changes how quickly an asteroid family will spread out. And that's what my poster was about.
Very good. I'll just go back to what you said there, that the main belt is a safe space. I don't think that's necessarily entirely clear. Most of the asteroids in the solar system are in the asteroid belt, main belt as asteroid people call it, because there's asteroids elsewhere actually too. And that's between Mars and Jupiter. And it's not like you might imagine in the movies, you know, when they fly through an asteroid belt, it's not just rocks everywhere. There's a good bit of space between them. And also, the reason they are still there is because they're far enough away from Jupiter and Mars, in this case, because they're the closest planets to them, that they are still hanging around. Whereas if they do get... That's my understanding, at least. You can tell me if I'm correct or not. Whereas if they do get close to planets, then there's other gravitational effects, which they're messing up, basically, what they're doing.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Excellent. I'm a comet person, you see, so I need to double-check that what I'm saying actually makes sense. Okay, that was it for the morning. I had some plenary sessions again in the afternoon. We already talked about what those are. And after that, well, that was the exciting time as well of the day. We went to Lowell Observatory, famed for discovering Pluto. Not sure you heard that. Can you do it again, Andrew?
Oh, sorry. I'll do it again. Dun, 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 dun.
Yes. And the Americans are very unhappy that some people think it... I mean, some people. Most astronomers think it shouldn't be a planet because, you know, they discovered it. But yes, we went up to Lowell and had a whole observatory grounds for ourselves, basically. I mean, for ourselves, not just four of us, but the, you know, 400 or how many people were at the conference. Yeah. Any impressions, thoughts, ideas?
They've got some cool telescopes. That's one big thing, right? That's the first impression. It's a very nice part of the world, really. So it's about a 10-minute drive away from the centre of the downtown of Flagstaff, right? Up a big hill. And I only just noticed you can actually see the top of it, top of some of the domes from where we are in the town centre. But, yes, it's quite secluded and... essentially, there's a lot of big old telescopes dating back to the 1800s or not early 1900s. I can't remember.
The oldest one is the 1890s. So yes, the very late 1800s.
And here's a tidbit of information for you. It turns out that the city we're in, Flagstaff, was founded after the American Civil War. So what after 1875, right? And when the observatory and university were founded, there was only 900 people in the whole town, which is a matter of optimism, I think, you know.
Wow, yeah. And you think Armagh's small.
Yeah.
Yes, well, I guess it does make it, or did make it, I suppose, a great place to put an observatory, because while there were some people and therefore a bit of infrastructure, there wasn't that much noise, light pollution, smoke, that sort of stuff. One of the things I learned yesterday, because we had a tour of the 24-inch, and I don't know how many feet long, but many feet long, it's a big telescope, refracting telescope, so it's got the lenses, the Clark telescope is what it's called, yes, I just finally remembered, and that one was the first one built, and also used, among other things, by a guy whose name I can't remember, has got a...
Spitz...
Schleifer?
No, yeah.
Schleifer, maybe?
I think that's the one. I think that's the one. To observe a galaxy redshift, basically, in the early 20th century. And if galaxy redshift observation sounds familiar at all, the name that might be in your head in regards to that would be Edwin Hubble.
Oh,
Turns out, though, Hubble might be a little bit of a fraud who stole his work initially. But, well, at least that's what the... It was a joke, but... So there was a bit of a tour guide, and he was explaining that Hubble, while he's very famous for doing the work about galactic redshifts and all sorts of business and the expansion of the universe, he wasn't the first. And he conveniently forgot to mention the person who was the first when he published it. So...
Something interesting we also found out was the reason that Lowell first constructed the telescope in the first place was to study Mars. And he looked at Mars every single night, and he made drawings in his notebook, and he saw the canals in Mars. And he thought these were remnants of a civilization. No, not remnants. He thought this was an active civilization, yeah, right? Yeah. And it turns out that they actually think that he spent so much time looking through the lens of the telescope at Mars that these canals that he was drawing in his notebook of Mars were not in fact canals of Mars. They were just the back of his eye, like the blood vessels of the back of his eye.
Those canals were definitely not on Mars, by the way, at any point. When he finally got to do photography of solar system objects, including Mars, we quickly discovered that, no, it was just kind of, you know, smooth areas, the ice caps, that sort of stuff. Eventually, when he got high resolution, he saw the craters, you know, volcanoes and stuff, but no canals. So, yeah. The other thing also, so, you know, we already have two things, canals on Mars. We had the galaxies moving away from us. And then, we mentioned earlier, Pluto.
Yes, we saw the telescope that they discovered Pluto with.
It was actually kind of smaller than I expected it to be.
Yes, it was smaller than the original Lowell one that was used to look at Mars, surprisingly. And I think it was discovered by accident as well. They took some measurements of the same area of the sky a couple of days apart, and they noticed that this little tiny white dot had moved place. And this is what led to the discovery of Pluto. Oh, and then something else they had set up was a bunch of more modern telescopes. In fact, a couple of them were the same telescope that we have in the observatory at the moment.
In the Art Dome.
Yes, in the Art Dome. And we got to look at the Moon. We got to see Venus. We got to see Mars. We got to see Vega. Anything else I'm missing?
And they also opened up the dome of the 1890 telescope, so the oldest one, and we got to have a look through that at a cluster M5. It was very pretty. It was very pretty.
Yes, and of course the dome was lit up with only red light, and it's kind of this kind of like a couple of circles as you go down to see through the eyepiece, which were lit up in all red rings, basically. So, you know, it definitely didn't look like we were about to make an occult sacrifice for the summer solstice at all. But the gorgeous globular cluster, though.
Another fun fact about that particular dome is that so whenever you're observing, you have to rotate the dome according to where you're pointing the telescope, because in the dome you have a slit and you want to protect the rest of the rest of the inside of the dome the rest of the time. And the dome, the way they move it around, is on a bunch of vintage, very vintage looking car tires from Ford car tires, and it makes a very loud and horrible noise whenever they rotate.
But it looks really fun, definitely, like a combination of wood and then those kind of old tires, yes. It was, of course, also a great night, just to be clear. So we didn't only see the planets and so on through a telescope, but with our eyes as well, in a nice line, the crescent moon, and then, yes, Venus, Mars, quite a bit dimmer. And Andrew wants to say something as well.
Oh, no, I was just going to say about the night sky is all. One of the cool things about Flagstaff and the actual area is that, well, it's cool if you're into this sort of thing. Is the fact that they've got quite particular laws about about the types of light they can use here. So, for those of you who don't know, most places are now starting to switch to LED lights, you know, very, very bright and blue. You've probably seen them in cars when they've been coming the other way and they blind you, right? But they're super efficient with energy, so everyone's big into them at the moment. The only problem is they are white light, I should say. Meaning that they've got lots of different, they've got lots of light from loads of the colour spectrum all put together, and it appears white to us. But traditional lamps are sodium, which is a kind of orangey colour. So when you see an orangey street lamp, that's a sodium light. And that only fills out just the orange and red aspects of the colour spectrum. White light covers so much more that there's way more light pollution. But because Flagstaff has some fairly strict laws about the types of light that you can use here, it means that you get really excellent night skies. Like, you can see the Milky Way, you can see all sorts. It's very cool.
Yeah, much more than you would expect for a city of this size, because they're trying quite hard to limit the light pollution. And there's other benefits of this as well. I could definitely make a whole episode just talking about why it would be good to try not to have everything lit up as brightly as daylight 24/7. But maybe we'll leave that for a topic for the future.
So that's everything we did yesterday, so Tuesday, and there was a lot on, so we didn't manage to record, but today we had some more parallel sessions, so lots of talks going on at once, and Zuri gave her talk, so she can talk a bit more about that.
Yes, so today there were two DART sessions. So just as a reminder, DART is the Double Asteroid Redirection Test, which happened back in September 2022. And the point of this test was to smash a spacecraft into the moon of an asteroid to try change its orbit. And the whole point of this was basically to test whether humans are capable of changing the orbit or changing the trajectory of an asteroid in the case that we find something heading our way. And one of the after effects of this impact was that a large dust cloud was ejected from this from the impact. And for my field, I use a method called polarimetry, which we've already discussed before, to try and find out information and constrain the properties of the material that is scattering the light and that's been ejected. So yeah, I talked about that in the second DART session today, and I think it went down well. I had a bunch of people approach me afterwards and ask me some questions. So the world of polarimetry is rather small, I'm finding, since it's a rather niche topic. So it's always nice to find some people that are interested in polarimetry that can ask questions that I can ask questions to and have some discussions around that. So yeah, I'm quite happy with how it went. And I now have a weight lifted off my shoulders, and I can enjoy the rest of the conference a bit more relaxed.
For example, this evening we have a banquet, which, if you're hearing a background noise, that might be the people setting up the banquet, because this is the quietest spot we could find. I'll keep apologizing for that, just because it's, you know, a departure from my usual high standards of recording.
So the banquet itself is going to be a fancy meal. I don't know if there's any science eating, but we're going to sit down. They'll give us a lot of food. In fact, the whole time they've given us a lot of food, I think it's fair to say. And, you know, it's a great opportunity to sort of go around, see people who you haven't had an opportunity to speak to yet, and not corral them, let's say, but, you know, say, hi, I'm such a big fan of your work. Please, can we talk about it? I mean, that's the whole conference, really, almost, isn't it?
Exactly.
And then tomorrow, we've got one more talk from a member of the RMR team, and that is none other than Dr. Rock himself.
But we leave that for tomorrow. Ha. Huh.
See ya.
Bye. Through the magic of editing and time passing, it is now potentially not Thursday after the Wednesday when we last talked anymore, but in fact a different Thursday. But we're still here. In the United States, in an undisclosed location. And we were like, oh, actually, we should probably finish off all this conference stuff. So let's do that. We last talked on Wednesday, so as far as you listeners are concerned, literally just now, and discussed Zuri's talk. And now we'll discuss what happened on Wednesday evening. What happened on Wednesday evening?
So it was the banquet. Essentially, it was just a big meal where everyone sat down in tables, and they announced, for example, where the next ACM was going to be.
So, drum roll. It's going to be in Poznan.
Poznan, Poland, in 3 years' time. Because this conference only happens every 3 years, which is a little unusual, but interesting, for sure. And indeed, the dinner happened. There were big tables. We could sit around.
And there was lots of asteroids. Oh, yes, and they announced the names of all of a load of new asteroids.
Indeed, yes. One of the traditions at ACM basically is that with collaboration with the people who discovered the asteroids, because they have the preference to name the asteroids themselves, and with collaboration with the International Astronomical Union and so on, and with academics in the asteroids, comets, meteors, etc. field through the world, people like to name asteroids. And so in this case, because it's been 6 years since the last conference, there was a lot of new asteroid names. I believe the thing said was like over 300.
Yeah.
Lots.
Yeah, they didn't read everyone out individually because that would have taken a long time. But new asteroid names appeared, including, in fact, our Zuri and I's, in my case, former, in Zuri's case, still current, UCL PhD supervisor, Geraint Jones. He got an asteroid, although in his case, it turns out, he got it a couple of years ago. But there's some other people with AOP affiliations, such as Galin Borisov, former postdoc here at AOP, and Ashwin Sekar, former PhD student at AOP. They both got asteroids named in their honor because they are still indeed working in the field of small bodies in the solar system. Cool stuff. It's nice to have a thing out in the sky named after you. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, and then once they'd done all that and we'd sort of sat down and had food, there was a dance show as well.
Indeed.
It was a Mexican dance show. I think it was by kind of a local group of dancers. It was very fun. Me and Zuri and Rock were kind of in the corner and watched from afar. So we didn't quite see everything, but it looked really good and it was good fun.
Yes, well, on the other hand, I'd been whisked away to chat with some sciencey people about science, and so I was kind of able to see it, and it was, goodness gracious, I had these long flowing dresses. I don't know, I'm sure if you YouTube it, it'll come up with something.
It's kind of like flamenco style, but with Mexican flair.
Yeah. And so, you know, lots of swirling dresses, and it all flowed very well. The girls and lads who were dancing were no lot older than maybe like 15, 16? It was like a youth group sort of thing.
I think there was even some younger. There were some like...
some little kids, exactly.
Some wee kids. But yeah, it was fun. They were a bit far away from where we were, but we enjoyed it all the same. We stood up. We were the last table to get our food, so by the time the dancers came up, we started eating, so I just stood up in the corner and ate my food while watching them. But yeah, it's great. Interesting.
And indeed, as Andrew mentioned there, he was whisked away to talk to some other people. You know, the whole point of a conference is networking with fellow astronomers in the field. And so a conference dinner, banquet, whatever you want to call it, is a good opportunity to do that.
And people tend to be a bit more agreeable to lots of ideas if they've had a wine or two, to be quite honest, right?
And a nice meal.
But people are more agreeable once they're well fed and happy and enjoying the show. So,
yeah, it's good to make connections and say, "Oh, we should definitely work together." At that point, and then it's like, "Ah, you promised." "Oh, but I had 2 glasses of wine at that point, but you still promised." That was Wednesday. Then we come to Thursday.
That was Rock's big day, because...
Oh, was it?
Yes, Rock had his talk. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I did have my talk. I was presenting some results from my analysis of comets, sun-grazing comets, basically, with polarimetric optics. That's a lot of words there. So sun-grazing comets get really, really, really close to the sun, and by really, really, really close, I mean they sometimes fall in and almost invariably fall apart when they get close to the sun, because they get so close that they just break apart. There's too much going on. And with polarimetry, well, if you listen to some previous episodes, there will have been explanations of polarimetry by Zuri in the reasonably recent past, and I don't know if I explained polarimetry at any point. I might have. Anyway, Zuri explained it well. And through polarimetry, we can try and figure out what the dust in the comets is made up of. And they behave kind of strangely. And that's what I was presenting. And yeah, had a bit of discussion afterwards with some people. That was the morning. There was also stuff on Thursday afternoon, and I'll let someone else talk about that.
We took a bus ride to Meteor Crater, which is a very well-preserved kind of crater in the middle of Arizona desert. It's got a nice visitor center, had a little walk around the rim. It was good fun.
It's a big hole in the ground.
Yeah, maybe it's better known as the Barringer Crater. At least I knew it as the Barringer Crater before I went, but everyone just calls it Meteor Crater.
Yes, locally all the signs, all the everything just says the Meteor Crater capitalized. And one of the tour guides actually called the guy Barringer. I would also have thought Barringer, and indeed some another person who was working there was saying Barringer. Call it whatever you like, but it's a big hole in the ground. Yes.
Oh, not to mention we save the world on a little. There's a little ride there, which is good fun. Boy.
Oh yes, I forgot about that. basically, whenever we arrived, we were two full buses of people, so there was just a lot of us, and we would have had to wait for quite a while for our tour. And just in the line, in the queue, there was a little door, and it said, "What did it say?"
Something like 4D experience.
Space mission something, yes.
Yeah, so we went onto this 4D experience. And you just sat in there. You had some screens in front of you. And you were on a space mission to crash into an asteroid. A bit like DART, actually, which is kind of fun. And because it was 4D, you had flashing lights. You had some air blown in your face. Your seats kind of shifted forwards and backwards, depending if you were flying upwards or flying downwards. You even had some little pistons of air, and you had these bangs on your back and on your backside and your seat, which felt a little invasive, I guess.
It was a little startling for sure, yes.
but that was a good way to spend the time instead of sitting in a queue.
Yeah, and actually in that video thing, we also got some nice panoramic views of the crater, which you don't actually get when you're on the ground and looking down. So that's good fun as well.
I mean, and we save the world, so you're welcome.
of course, yes. So we went to see the meteor crater, which is very appropriate for a conference, asteroids, comets, meteors. And so it was a lot of people went there, because there were actually several options for the different tours you could take, or indeed you could take none if you so desired. But most people went to the meteor crater because it's relevant. And that was Thursday. And then we got to Friday, the last day of the conference. Have another talk, this one presented by Tolis, Apostolis Christou, Dr. Christou. Tolis, for most of us, who is the PhD supervisor of both Alice and Andrew here. And what did he talk about?
He talked about, there's a meteor stream called the Taurids, and there is also a space probe going to Venus?
Mercury.
To Mercury, Bepi Colombo mission, yes.
And he was looking at whether Bepi Colombo will be able to see this meteor stream from Mercury. It was very interesting, because it will, a few times.
So it turns out that this meteor stream's orbit, which is kind of following, obviously, its parent object, goes really close to Mercury. And so, yes, from Bepi Colombo, we'll actually see it happening as it passes around Mercury. Interesting stuff. Yeah, that's very brief summary, obviously, of it.
There's also one other talk about polarimetry of some asteroids. So I think that brings it up to a total of maybe 5 times polarimetry was mentioned throughout the week, including Rox and I talk. So minus our talks, it would only be 3 times, I think. But yes, it was interesting. And I actually had a chat with the speaker of that talk. And maybe I have a new connection. I don't know.
And again, that is what conferences are about, sharing ideas and also networking, seeing, oh, you do this sort of thing, I do similar sort of thing, let's chat. And then the conference ended. There wasn't like a big fanfare. There wasn't like a final event when they all got together and be like, oh, well, congratulations on finishing the conference, blah, blah. No, the dinner was on Wednesday, kind of did that job. We learned what the next one's going to be and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, that is it.
We just, okay, last session's done. Everyone, go home. It's really not dramatic. It was really not dramatic at all.
You could also tell that by the Friday, the last day, everyone was just so tired. You know, the energy was not quite as high as the first Monday or Tuesday. I think I counted up to 5 people sleeping throughout the entire day. Some of them just kind of hanging out in the seating area outside, having a nap, and a couple people dozing off between different talks. But that's expected. Everyone's been waking up super early every day, all week, and being stressed or hyped, or excited, you know. It's tiring stuff, conferences.
Yes, it is. It is. And so we decided to then take a few days off to relax. And that's what we've been doing since. I think we mentioned that at the very beginning. I can't remember anymore.
We did mention that we were doing a road trip.
We did mention we're going to doing a road trip, yes. So that's currently happening, in progress, as we record this. Well, not quite. We're not exactly in the car on the road. That will be very noisy background. Not good for podcast recording. And that about wraps it up. I mean, we could talk about things we saw, I guess. We could do it very briefly. In case this is too long, we could even cut it from the episode. Where have we been? So we set off on Saturday, and we've been off.
We did the Grand Canyon.
We did Monument Valley.
We swam in Lake Powell.
Indeed, yes. And then we saw a slot canyon, which is basically a very narrow canyon, called the Wire?
The Wire Tap Pass.
The Wire Tap Pass. Okay, something like that. And anything else? Yes, there's some other things.
We went to Zion National Park.
We saw Horseshoe Bend.
Oh, yes, Horseshoe Bend. I forgot about that one. This is very nice there. And, well, now we are, as I mentioned, in an undisclosed location, which may or may not be in Las Vegas. There you are, all caught up. Like, we could talk about all the travels for another half hour or an hour, but that would be like a travelogue at that point, not exactly a science podcast. So maybe best leave it here.
Yes, so overall, very enjoyable time, very productive and interesting at the conference, and now nice to relax on our holidays. And, yeah.
Hope you enjoyed listening to this. And goodbye from the four of us. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
Oh, forgot, of course, the most important question that we need to ask. Hey, everyone, do you need some space?
After this week, with all of you, most definitely.